And I'm on the mission to do is to basically allow anyone to get into real estate. If you're the kind of person who wants to, if it's your private residence, if you want to buy your first real estate deal, let us help you kind of get it so that you can go to your friends in a way which is easy, which is compliant, or go to the crowd and go and be able to get your first deal.
Your network is your net worth. Come listen to some of the most successful people I know. Share invaluable knowledge, stories, and advice in real estate, business, and beyond. This is Weiss Advice. Whether you want to take your business or personal life to the next level, look no further.
Welcome back to another episode of Weiss Advice. I'm your host, as always, with hopefully the same amount of energy today, Yona Weiss, feeling a little under the weather. Hope you guys can't tell, but I'm with Levy Brackman today, so I'm feeling much better. Great to see you, Levy. Great to have you on the show. How you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic.
Wonderful. Guys, if you don't know who Levy is, well, we're going to get to know him today. He's got a great story, and he is currently the CEO and founder of an incredible company called Invown. I hope I pronounced that correctly. And it's a real estate marketplace where you can actually invest in real estate in fractional ownership online. Something that a lot of others have attempted to do, but Levy is trying to change the game with what he's working on. So I'd love to learn a little bit about your background. I know you've been investing in real estate for many years yourself, but have taken a bit of a different path than most real estate investors, from what I understood in our previous conversation. How did you get into real estate, and you know, what were you doing that led you up to this?
You know, I said for a long time that I wouldn't get into real estate. And one of the reasons was, you know, in the Talmud, it says that someone who doesn't have a house is not a person. You know, you're not a complete person without a house. Mm-hmm. And I interpreted that to mean that it's really a necessity of life on the one hand, and also it's an emotional purchase, you know, and people do that. I saw 2008, prices went up and people did all kinds of irrational things to buy homes and then losing that and lost them. And I said to myself, this is something which is really difficult to understand, because something which is based on people's emotions is really hard to, you know, to really kind of predict and know what will happen. And therefore, it might be better to invest in something which is not so emotional based. But as I started, you know, I bought my first home and then I ended up buying another one and then another one. And I realized the economics in it. And then actually there is a fundamentals to it. There is a mathematics to it. And there is a way to actually make this work. And you're actually selling something which people need, especially if it's residential real estate. Everyone needs a roof over their head. And I never have ever considered myself to be a real estate guy, but I'm a guy who does real estate. So,
right. Meaning you were, from what I understand, you're a data scientist, right?
That's something. Yeah, before that, I was a rabbi. That was the first thing. I've actually got 3 rabbinic ordinations. And I had a congregation in North London, and then I had one in Colorado. So I was a rabbi. And at some point, I got into nonprofit work, as rabbis do, right? Helping out kids kind of figure out their life. And I started this organization called Youth Directions in 2008. And it ended up being what you might consider today to be a edutech, an edtech company, where basically it was an online application to help kids kind of figure out their life, and ended up being to help adults figure out their life, which took me into doing a PhD in psychology to kind of figure out, is what we built, is it actually doing what we think it's doing? And it turns out it did.
Wow.
It was actually helping people figure out their lives. But as that was going on and doing my PhD, it ended up being very highly quantitative. And by the way, I had no background in mathematics. I don't know if any the kind of education I had. Right. We didn't. Some people, for whatever reason, they thought we didn't need math. So they never taught us math growing up.
Right.
So I didn't really even know when I got into doing my PhD. I had talked my way into a university course back when I was in my 20s, and then ended up getting a master's degree from University College London, which I don't know if people in America know is one of the top universities in the world. And so when I got into my PhD program, they figured if someone's got a master's from UCL, they probably know math.
Not necessarily.
Well, I don't know. This guy didn't really know math that well. So I was thrown into kind of a highly quantitative PhD program where I had to know a lot of statistics. So I had to kind of figure out how to learn statistics really quickly. I was waking up, you know, 3:30 in the morning doing courses in statistics to try and figure it all out just to kind of keep up. I ended up getting really fascinated by statistics. I learned how to code in R, and I got fascinated by this whole thing called data science. And I thought to myself, AI, that's the new, I thought like, you know, if Aristotle or Maimonides knew data science, I thought they would become data scientists, not philosophers. Anyway, I was wrong about that. Okay. But that's what I thought at the time. So I went to learn everything I could about data science. And I realized like big data is where it's at to become gain true knowledge is through analyzing big data. So I ended up getting a job as a data scientist with a big data company. But it was all kind of part of my quest for knowledge. It wasn't, I never set out to say, I want to be a data scientist. I started to kind of wanted to know this thing which we built, is it helping people or not? Is it actually doing what we said we were going to do? And then I realized, well, we can, there's this whole thing called AI and data science and machine learning. And I became fascinated by that. And I decided to become a practitioner of that. And that's what I did for a few years. Ended up starting off as a individual contributor for Travelport in 2016. I exited corporate America as a senior director, you know, with a bunch of reports, et cetera, Priceline in 2020.
Wow. So you had a lot of background there, right? Which has obviously led you to founding what you founded today. But wait a second, you didn't really answer the question, which was that at a certain point,
you did buy
a house or something or bought some sort of property and started renting things out. Like at what point in the mix of all of that did that actually happen?
So I realized I bought some real estate and you had rented it out. And then what actually happened with Invone, I'm going to jump to what happened with Invone because I was buying my I'd moved for a job to Connecticut and I was looking to buy another house to actually live in because the houses I had in Colorado, I was renting out, et cetera. And I decided I want to buy another house to live in. So I wanted to figure out, do I want to live here or not? So I rented a house and it turned out the house I was renting, I actually wanted to buy. It was a very nice house. And I had a kind of a deal with the landlord that I would get, you know, right to first refusal. And we had an agreement that if I wanted to buy the house, we had a ballpark figure in which, you know, he would accept. So I came along and said, yeah, I would like to buy the house. And this is the price we had agreed upon. And I'm willing to pay more or less that price, you know, a little bit of negotiations. And he said, okay, let me get back to you in a day. The next day he got back to me and said, guess what? All of a sudden there's somebody else showed up who wants to buy this house. And he's willing to pay $30,000 more than we had agreed. He said, but if you pay $1,000 more, then it's yours.
Interesting. Interesting how that happened.
Yeah. So I said, okay, no problem. Just show me the bona fide, you know, contract. And, you know, let me see if I can do that. Turned out that he couldn't do it because if he showed me the contract, he says his lawyer says that would be acting in bad faith. But anyway, the point is that as I was going through this, I realized that, okay, he wants more money. The housing market, this was 2019, had gone nowhere in New Haven for like literally 12 years. And so the question was, what do I do here? Do I overpay? Or what? And what I thought to myself was, well, what if I share the risk with investors? If I have investors and have investors invest in my primary residence and I share the risk, and then, you know, then I take some of the risk, they take some of the risk. And so I looked around to see, does anyone do this? And I found there were a bunch of companies doing this. It's, well, I don't need to share their names because I'm going to say something which I don't think is so positive about them. And they'll do this, but they charge a lot. So for example, one of the things they say, they'll say, we'll give you 10% of the value of your home, but we want 60% of the upside. Plus the 10% back. Mm-hmm. So anything upside. And if I did that in 2019, that would have been crazy returns for them. Mm-hmm. Right. But when I, even at a 3.9% appreciation rate, which is the average appreciation of all property in the United States, residential property in the United States over the course of 60 years, which is basically just a little bit higher than in line with inflation, their return would have been somewhere around 27, 28%. So it was just like a crazy return. I realized that was a bad deal for me. And I started to think to myself, like, there must be a better way. Like, there's a need here, right? People want to buy a house. Mm-hmm. Housing prices are going to go up. Getting an investor in to invest alongside them is a good idea. But cost of capital with these players is just too high.
Right.
So how can we bring that down? And that's how Invone was basically born.
So tell me how this differs from just taking a loan against your house, because essentially the bank, in all intents and purposes, is that investor who's coming in and financing, you know, 80, 90% of the home or what have you. So how is this any different than that?
So to be clear, the marketplace which we've built, which is ready and open for business today, is not just for homeowners. It's for anyone wanting to raise money for real estate. So if you're a commercial person, if it's a multifamily deal, if you just want to get into real estate and you're looking to how do I fund this deal, you know, call me, talk to me. we'll be able to kind of help you try and figure out how to get something on the marketplace to get funding for it from just everyday investors. So if you're a homeowner, we'll also help you. You'll need to put your house in the name of an LLC, but you can kind of, you can raise capital that way as well. So it's a crowdfunding site for real estate, only real estate. So it has to be a real estate backed asset. But how is this different from a loan? Well, it's equity. You know, you think about capital stack. Anyone who's done commercial real estate understands what capital stack is. You have your debt, right, which you get from the bank, and then you have your equity, you're selling equity. That happens in residential real estate as well. Just the equity usually comes from the homeowner, right? But what we're saying is build yourself a capital stack, right? You can have like 10% of the equity coming from other investors. So there's the difference between equity and debt. Now think about, so homes go up on average 3.9% a year, right? So if your interest rate on your loan is less than 3.9%, as it has been the last couple of years, you're in the money, right? But if interest rates are higher, so now interest rates are in the fives, right? You're actually paying more interest than on average what your home's going to appreciate over 30 years. So you're out of the money. So this is actually a good time to actually say, hey, if I can bring in an investor, then I reduce the amount of interest I'm paying at a high interest rate. The investors, their motivation is because they've got cash and they want a good hedge against inflation, and real estate's a good hedge against inflation. And it's low risk because it's a residential property. The guy, the owner, is taking care of the property. And that way, Zenana and Zenana, right? They're both, everyone benefits.
Everyone benefits. It's a win-win.
It's a win-win.
Interesting. Okay. So, I mean, obviously it's different than the typical, you know, financing is equity. There's an upside for both people, but, and you probably don't have to go down the traditional routes of, you know, of being cleared and for financing, et cetera, that you would have to through a bank. So, I mean, it does sound like there's a lot of benefit here for the average investor who's just looking to find a partner on a deal. It sounds like, you know, obviously, like you said, there was a niche, there was a need out there, and you guys are coming in to fill this need.
We hope to. I mean, you know, it's still early days and it's a two-sided marketplace, which are notoriously hard to get going. But, you know, we've got the tenacity, and the Americans have this wonderful term called stick-to-itiveness to get it going. So
the funny thing is that, you know, obviously you're not American from your accent, I can tell. But what's interesting is that, you know, America is an interesting marketplace for real estate more than almost anywhere else. You see people around the world investing in the U.S. more so than, you know, than people from the U.S. investing in other places around the world, for example. Why do you think that is? And what drives the American marketplace that makes it so beneficial as opposed to maybe some other place where you came from?
I'm no expert in this. So one of the things I've learned is to not to kind of talk about things that I have no expertise on. I don't really know. I just know that in England, for example, because my mother owns a home there which she rents out, rents just don't rise as much in terms of relative to the price of the home as they do in the United States. That's one observation I've had. I don't know whether that's the reason, but you know, she's got a home which is probably today worth £1 million, and she can still only get £3,000 a month rent in a really decent area. So, I mean, it just doesn't end up, the cash and cash return is just not there, right?
Right. No, that makes sense. That makes sense. I mean, listen, that is one of the reasons why America, I believe, has such a great real estate market is there's, you know, like you said, not just the appreciation, but a lot of times forced appreciation through the growing, you know, demand for rentals, but also the demand for housing. And investors are, you know, capitalizing on that for better or for worse. I mean, obviously rent's going up all over the place, but at the same time, it's within the means, right? Meaning it is proportional to the job growth and the median, you know, household income, what have you, of that location. So it's not like, you know, sometimes you hear in certain places around the country, there's rent growth going, you know, up by 200, 300%, and it's a little out of proportion. And maybe people who are living there, or like, you know, paying $800 rent, now they're asking $2,400 for rent. It seems far-fetched, but if that's what the actual, you know, data shows, and that's what the, you know, location of people are willing to pay for rent in that space for that similar type of apartment, I think that's fair.
It's interesting because if you look at England as a paradigm, for example, right, we haven't seen that happen. So we've seen, which might be a paradigm for the United States as well, just beware, right, that you have a situation in England where rents haven't grown, but prices of properties have grown like crazy, And what's happened is that a lot of people can't afford to buy. Most people, I know my siblings live in England and they're in their 30s and 40s. They can't afford to buy a home in these areas of London because just way, way too expensive. There's no way they can buy a home, but they can rent, right? So you have a rental opportunity, but not a purchase opportunity. And I think that the people who are the single family, you know, the big Amherst and those guys, American Home for Rent, who are buying single family homes like crazy. They've bought like just in North Carolina itself, they own 40,000 single family homes. And across the United States, billions of dollars are going to it. I think they look at Europe and they say, look, what's going to happen is, you know, no one's buying more land. So if we get in cheap and we buy these homes, right, the prices are going to go up, but rent might not increase as much. We hold too long. All we need to do is, they're not making money. They don't look at cash on cash return necessarily. What they look at,
of course, looking at,
how can I break even and make money on the appreciation?
Absolutely.
Because if you look at Europe, this is what's happening, right? Rent doesn't go up like that because rent, people can't pay. People who are renting, they're renting for a reason. They can't pay that amount of rent. So they just hold until appreciation goes up and they sell it on to homeowners who can afford it. Homeownership, the ability for homeownership goes down. Rental stays the same, but it just doesn't, it's not as profitable. The money is on appreciation.
There's so many different ways to make money in real estate. That's the amazing thing. And I think cash on cash is something that a lot of commercial real estate investors specifically and, you know, multifamily investors are looking at the main way to make money in real estate. But appreciation, equity plays, et cetera, have always been, you know, the core of the real, you know, wealth creation in real estate. And I think when you're looking at it long-term like that, buying land is one of the best ways to do that, especially if you're buying a strategic location. So question on that, in what you're covering, I want to dig a little bit deeper into, you know, how you actually, you've launched this company, you've launched this way for people to invest. And now you say that I can take, you know, put $1,000 in and buy a fractional investment in anything. So I have a few questions on that. Number one, am I buying securities? Because typically speaking, that's how these crowdfunding platforms work. And number two, kind of going along with that, so do I need, if that's the case, do I need to be an accredited investor in order to, you know, get involved?
So let me take the second one first. On our platform, you do not have to be accredited. Anyone can invest. To answer the first one. The second one, yes, it is securities. Anytime, I know people like to fudge this, but the reality is, according to the Howey rule basically says something very simple. And that is that if you are looking, you're joining an enterprise and you're looking to get a profit based on the efforts of others, so you're not doing any work, it's a security. Okay, so it's very clear. So if you're buying real estate, a piece of real estate, and you're not doing anything, you're not a general partner, you're not actually doing, you're not cleaning the floors or anything, it's a security. So we're selling securities. The reason why we can do this to non-accredited investors is because we're a funding portal, which is a legal designation. We're registered with the SEC and a member of FINRA. And funding portals are allowed to offer securities to the general public. So we are an intermediary, which the issuer, who's the owner of the property, or the person who wants to buy the property and is raising money to buy the property, places their deal on our marketplace. We do some betting. So we have an obligation to make sure no fraud takes place and all the right disclosures are there. And then it can be offered to the general public.
Understood. Okay. So that makes sense. So that's different than, you know, just investing directly in a security per se, or what allows you not to.
You're investing directly into the security.
Oh, okay.
So you're buying the security.
You're buying the security and then it investing in a pool that is going to invest in. Okay.
No, you're so investing directly into the deal. It's exactly the same thing as any syndication deal. You're investing directly into LLC, which owns the real estate. The reason why anyone can do it, if it's done through our platform, is because there's a legal designation, which we have, which is a funding portal. So we have to go through a whole process of registering with the SEC and then membership of FINRA. FINRA membership was the tough bit, which allows, called using Reg CF, right? And Reg CF allows, it's an exemption. So usually any security has to be registered with the SEC.
Right.
An IPO, and it's a very arduous process. Reg A, very arduous process. If you want to sell to the public, if you want to sell to accredited investors, not that difficult at all. SEC doesn't really care if accredited investors kind of lose money. They're supposed to be sophisticated. It's their problem if they lose money.
Right.
But for general public, they're really a protected class, especially if they're non-accredited, and therefore they need to be protected. What our role is to protect the general public. So we have to vet the deal to make sure that there's no fraud going on. And the general public is aware through all the different disclosures that we have on our marketplace to make sure the general public knows what they're investing in and the risks associated with it.
Gotcha. So the vetting process of the deal itself is much more arduous from your side, it sounds like.
Not necessarily of the deal itself. That, in other words, we're not looking to necessarily make sure that the deal is the best deal in the world, but it's to make sure that there's no fraud being perpetrated on the investor.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Obviously, there are tons of these platforms that are out there that you can invest in real estate. You can invest in fractional shares and things like that. And oftentimes, there were some, you know, bad actors who were involved, and, you know, people default on loans or default on these kind of things. And that's what you got to be wary of and be careful of.
Any kind of investment, the deal is you can lose your money. Doesn't matter. You know, the market conditions, it could be there's no fraud, no bad actors. It just, you know, something happened. So there's risk, and we disclose all those risks up front.
Makes a lot of sense. Okay. So now I wrap my head around it. I'm a little slow today because I am, like I said, feeling a little under the weather. So I got, maybe it's the Advil or whatever that's making my brain a little fuzzy today, but I appreciate your patience and explaining that. What do you see the goal, right? Obviously, you just launched this. You spent years, you know, you spent a lot of time actually being involved, setting this up, like you said, jumping through all the hoops of getting it cleared and getting through all the registrations and all that kind of stuff. What do you see as the goal, you know, next year or two, 5 years from now with this?
So the reason why, one of the reasons I started this is not just because of what happened with me trying to buy this house. It's that what I realized as I thought much more deeply into real estate is that real estate is a situation where the little guy always gets the raw end of the deal. You know, they go and work hard and they take their money and they cart it off to the banks, which are really hedge funds, right? Or the Fed, if they're buying the mortgage-backed securities in these interest rates. And over 30 years, they're paying huge amounts of money for their homes. You know, it's a raw deal for the little guy. It constantly is a raw deal for the little guy. The big guys, wealthy people, they can get into really good investments, 20% IRRs, 25% IRRs, 35% IRRs, being crazy the way people have made money in real estate. The little guy, all they're doing is carting off their hard-earned money to the banks and to the hedge funds every single month. It made me think of my father, right? My father had a PhD in chemistry. My father, he was a really hardworking guy, never made much money. He was one out of nine kids. And, you know, the solution to a threadbare carpet in our home was a rug, not a new carpet, right? That's how we lived. But we go to the synagogue and we'd see these people showing up with a brand new Jaguar. Some guy had a Porsche, et cetera. How did they make all this money? My father, you know, he tried to get in on deals when he could, but it just wasn't accessible to him. The little guy just doesn't have access, right? So what I want to do, and I'm on the mission to do, is to basically allow anyone to get into real estate. If you're the kind of person who wants to, if it's your private residence, if you want to buy your first real estate deal, let us help you kind of get it so that you can go to your friends in a way which is easy, which is compliant, or go to the crowd and do and go in and be able to get your first deal. If you want to invest in real estate, a friend of mine around here basically sent me a text saying, thank you so much for allowing also us to be able to invest in these kind of deals. And that's the, you know, it shouldn't just be the wealthy. It shouldn't just be the big macher insurer who should be allowed to kind of put in their $100,000. You know, only the guys with $200,000 to invest can invest with me. No, I'm encouraging people to come to my platform and allow everyone into their deals. You got good deals? Good deals which are giving people 25% IRR? Why shouldn't you open that to everyone? Why not? Mm-hmm. You know, it's just fair that everyone should have access. The fact is that the laws allow it, right? We now have the technology which we've built to allow it. There's no reason not to open up your deals to everybody if you've got really good deals, number one. Right. Number two, if you want to invest in real estate, here's an opportunity to, right? You don't have to be wealthy to do it. So my goal is to basically, real estate's a great way in which people can build wealth, generational wealth. I want to open that up to everybody.
Makes sense. There's a lot of people out there who think that they can't do it. And I get contacted all the time by people, young people especially, who hear about, you know, real estate, but they can't get involved and they want to learn and they want to get involved somehow or another. This seems like a great option for a lot of people, especially when you're able to, I mean, through something like this, you can probably diversify a lot better because you may be investing in, you know, several different deals. And that's a great opportunity. So I appreciate you doing this. Appreciate you coming out and sharing with us all about what you're working on. And I want to transition now what we call the final four. So these are four questions I ask all my guests. First question for you, Levy, is what is the worst job that you ever had?
When I was 16 years old, I'd gotten into some kind of an accident or whatever. I needed to pay to get it fixed for a car. And I basically didn't have any money. So I had to work schlepping boxes. And I worked at a Judaica store in Brooklyn. And I basically was like through the, I shut boxes and it was brutal and it was hard, but I did it and I got paid and I paid back the loan. But that was the worst job I ever had.
That sounds grueling.
It's like, it was grueling.
It's like slave labor almost.
I had calluses on my hands at the end of that. Yeah. But any work is good work. That's the truth. It was just a hard job. You know, there's nothing I won't do in order to be able to make sure I pay my commitments.
Wow. Okay. I mean, definitely hard labor is hard. And working to pay off a loan is even harder because you're like indentured servitude there. Okay. Second question. What's a book that you've read that's given you a paradigm shift?
It's going to be, there's two books, which I always mention. One is Siddhartha from Hermann Hesse. And the other one is The Guide to the Perplexed Mora Nebuchim from Maimonides. They both like massively opened up my mind to new and different things in different ways. So those are the two books I have to give to.
Those are great. A little bit out of the ordinary in terms of our regular list, but it's always great. I mean, those are both of them incredible classics. So I appreciate you bringing those up. Third question, what's a skill or talent that you would like to learn? And this could be anything.
You know, I'd like to get really, really good at chess. So I've learned, I know I play chess, but I want to get much, much better at it.
Okay, that's amazing. We actually had, you're not the first person who said that on this show. We occasionally get repeat answers on that. So a trivia question, if anyone listening to this can guess who the other guest was in the last 250 episodes or so that said chess is something that they'd like to learn, I will give you a free Weiss Advice t-shirt or hoodie. If you're listening to this, just message me and let me know if anyone listens to this. Who knows? Probably someone's listening to this. And if you're a good listener, you'll probably figure this out. Fourth and final question, what does success mean to you?
You know, success means the day I die, I'm going to ask myself only one question. And that is, was humanity better off for my existence? And if I can answer yes to that question, then I'll die a very happy man. I'll have lived a successful life. That's it. It begins and ends with that question. There's nothing else more that I care about, really. And that is the value which guides everything I do.
That's it. That's all we can do. That's all we can hope for. Hopefully we'll leave the world better than we came into it. So that's every day. It's kind of what our mission is. And really, you should be looking at it on an everyday basis. I mean, to be honest, that's how I look at it. You know, what did I do today that made the world a better place?
Yeah.
Amazing. Levy, it's been a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you so much. Where can our listeners find you or reach out to you?
So invown.com, INVOWN. Invown is made up of two words, invest and own. INV for the invest and OWN is own. So it's for investors and owners, two-sided marketplace. Invown.com, Levy spelled L-E-V-I, like Levi, like the jeans, at invown.com. You can email me anytime. Any questions you have, please feel free to reach out. And thank you so much for having me on, Yonah.
My pleasure. Thank you for joining me once again. And to our listeners, thank you for listening. I hope someone gets that trivia question and messages me. And remember, until next time, the best advice comes only when you ask. Real quick, I have one question for you. Did you like this episode? If you did, I want to ask you a huge favor. See, the biggest thing that helps this podcast grow and that will spread this message to the whole world is that if you leave a review, a rating, and subscribe to the podcast. What that does is it basically tells the platforms that this podcast is out on is that you like my stuff and I'm doing something right. So take a few seconds out of your day, hit that subscribe button, leave a rating or review. I would be extremely grateful. Also, I want to hear from you guys. So I want to hear some feedback. If you have any questions for future episodes, please find me on LinkedIn. Send me a DM, a connection request, Yonah Weiss, and I'd love to hear from you.